Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns. Brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. Listen Sundays at 6:30 a.m. on KKOA 107.7 FM or at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. Or to the podcast at lava1053.com or koacountry1077.com. Now here's your host and producer, Sherry Brackett.
Aloha, good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. Today we are talking with Hawaii County Prosecutor Mitch Roth. Mitch has been county prosecutor since first being elected in 2012, and he was reelected in 2016. Aloha, Mitch.
Aloha, Sherry.
I've had the nice opportunity to see Mitch at various events over the years, including last year he was named one of the YWCA's remarkable persons. So Mitch has been recognized in the community for some of the very good things he does and also for the work that his office does. And I'd like to start with that, Mitch. Your office, you are the prosecuting attorney. Tell us how many attorneys you have and really what the function of you and your team is.
Well, you know, we have about, 34 attorneys today. That number will be changing. Hopefully, we have some more people coming on. We have about 125 people in our office. So it's a pretty big office over three different offices, one in Hilo, one in Kona, and one in Waimea. And I'm blessed to work with some really great people that, you know, have a lot of heart. And, you know, I believe that one of the things that we try to do is we try to make our community a safer and healthier place.
That's your mission.
Well, actually, our mission statement is we pursue justice with integrity and commitment. But I believe that more than just the mission, what our real goal is to make our community a safer and healthier place. And that's what we aim to do.
There is a county attorney who's known as the Corporation Counsel. How does the job of that person differ from your job?
Sure. The Corporation Counsel handles the civil cases for the county. The prosecuting attorney, which is what we do, we handle all of the criminal matters for the county.
So if somebody is arrested, they would be going through your office.
Correct.
You're the ones that would charge them and prosecute them.
Correct.
As they say, to the full extent of the law?
Depending on the crime, sometimes it will be to the full extent of the law. But mostly, you know, our goal is to do justice. And sometimes that means going to the full extent, and sometimes it means maybe taking an alternative route and trying to make some changes.
Roughly how many cases are open in your office? How many cases are you all handling?
So in any one year, it's anywhere between 17,000 and 20,000 cases that come to our office. Now, you have to understand that some of those are felony offenses. Some of those are traffic offenses. We handle everything from parking tickets to murders and everything in between. A lot of drug cases, a lot of theft cases. So we have a whole bunch of different stuff going on in our office.
You know, people see prosecuting attorneys on TV all the time, Law and Order, etc. What are the challenges that you face in real life in bringing the people who do commit crimes to justice and in concluding a case in the way that you want it concluded?
Well, you know, on TV, police get their job done within an hour. That doesn't happen in real life, obviously. And the cases are done in that same hour. So you have the police investigation and you have the court case and the conviction within an hour. In real life, there's a lot of work that needs to be done for the investigation. Depending on the case, sometimes the police are just there for one day working on a case. And then there's cases that police will work on for possibly years. So there's some big differences there. For Hawaii, once we charge a case, we have 180 days to get that case through trial. Now, that doesn't always happen. And a lot of people look at our murder cases, and some of our murder cases, I'm actually working on a murder case right now that's we charged 2 years ago. And so how does that work if you just said 180 days? Well, when defense makes a continuance, or a motion for continuance, that time is told. When the prosecutors make a motion for continuance, very rarely will the time be told.
Now, when you say the time is told, I'm guessing that what you really mean is that if the defense attorney asks for a continuance, the judge says, okay, that comes out of the 180 days,
correct,
you can have 20 days more or a month more or 2 months more. But when you, Mitch Roth, and the prosecuting attorney say, we need a delay, judge says, well, take all the time you want, but 180 days is 180 days.
Correct. And then we have other problems that come into play here is that when a defendant first comes into court, they don't have an attorney, so they're assigned an attorney. That takes a lot of time. The court sets a date. Defense attorneys may not make a request for a continuance like right away. They may wait until the trial is coming, so they try to run out the clock. There's a lot of gamesmanship that I think defense attorneys do. For us, my goal, and I tell everybody who comes into our office, is that we treat people the way you want your family members treated. So that goes for people in our office that we work with. That goes for our victims, most importantly. It goes for defendants and defense attorneys. That doesn't mean that they get a special deal, but it means that you're going to treat them fairly and honestly, because we live on an island, quite frankly, and all of us have family members or friends that eventually do something that's not too smart. And the question is, how do you want those people treated? And we try to treat people fairly. That's one of our goals, is to do that. So we try not to play games. We try to do things on the up and up. And the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is that if we don't believe we can prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt, we have an ethical duty not to charge that. And that's hard sometimes for people to understand, because there's times when we're looking at cases, and I know you were going to talk about cold cases. When we look at those cold cases, oftentimes we kind of know who did it. Proving who did it is another issue. And sometimes that's an issue because the evidence that we have may have been obtained illegally. Sometimes, we've had cases recently where we lost our witnesses.
And how could you lose the witnesses?
Suicide.
That's not good.
That's generally not good. We've had deaths. A lot of these cold cases, I can talk a little bit more freely about the Kemah case.
Talking Peter Boy Kemah.
Right. And so when we looked at that case, there's a lot of witnesses that unfortunately were no longer around that we would have loved to have going to trial.
But that was a more than 20-year-old or about a 20-year-old cold case.
Right. But that happens even in cases where, it happens within this last year. Things happen. People aren't here. We have a hard time sometimes finding them. Or we have people kind of turn. In domestic violence cases, that's a typical situation where you'll have a victim who makes the report and then realizes this is the person that they love. This is the person who, they depend on for financial support. This is the person. And so they start minimizing, and they may even, change their story. Those things make the cases a lot harder. You don't see those things getting back to the TV, on the TV, and some of the challenges that we go through. The other big challenge that we have here in Hawaii is probably the most defense-oriented state. And I could say that it's the most liberal state as far as the way our judges look at things. We have a Supreme Court that's very defense-oriented.
Meaning in favor of?
Defendant.
Right. Not in favor of, that's sort of like they're not in favor of law and order is what I'm hearing.
Well, our state constitution gives you more rights of privacy than the United States Constitution. Now, if I just say it that way, and you hear you have more rights of privacy, that sounds pretty cool. But when we look at it, it's a little bit different. That gives defendants more rights of privacy. Very rarely gives victims more rights of privacy. Things are more edged toward the defendant. So let me give you an example. I saw your purse that you had over there. If you were to be arrested on this island in any place other than the national parks, that bag that you have, it would go into the evidence as one beige bag, contents unknown.
Because the police can't look in it.
They can't look at it unless they get a search warrant. And sometimes to get a search warrant, you're talking about writing a warrant, which may take a couple of hours. Now, if you're arrested in the national park or just about any other state in the United States, evidence would say one beige bag, contents. I know you have your 9mm handgun in there.
You've looked.
Yeah, I did. the ice pipe. it would have all of the things that are in there, they'd be listed out. In Hawaii, we don't have that. In the rest of the United States, it's called an inventory search, and we can do inventory and we can look through that stuff. And but you have more privacy rights after you're arrested or even before you're arrested than other places in the United States. And that goes for, you know, our drinking and driving laws. You have more privacy rights. It goes for just about every case that you have more privacy rights. And it really only affects, that I can figure out, defendants and not victims or the regular public.
Interesting. And a brief interruption to remind you, this is Island Issues, and I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. Today, we're in part one of a two-part discussion with Hawaii County Prosecutor Mitch Roth. In today's discussion, we will continue talking about child abuse, how the prosecutor handles police misconduct cases, and bail, particularly as it relates to the criminal who bailed out and went on to shoot and kill Officer Bronson Kaliloa. Next Sunday morning, we continue the discussion with more about that criminal and some pretty shocking news about him, car theft, sexual assault and domestic violence, and more. Island Issues is here every Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And you may find past Island Issues online at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Let's get back to our conversation with Hawaii County Prosecutor Mitch Roth. You mentioned the Peter Kema case, and everybody may remember that case, but that was the situation where Peter Boy, who was how old was he at the time?
He was 6 years old.
He was six at the time. He was reported as missing by his family, and the ultimate resolution came about a year ago when you were able to finally prove that his parents were complicit in his death. Although they may not have directly murdered him, he had sepsis, a bad infection on his arm. They allowed that to proceed, and he died, and you were able to jail both parents for various offenses.
Right.
But that was a case of horrible child abuse. In fact, the whole family was abused. And there have been other cases of child abuse. And one thing you and I talked about a year ago, in fact, was the fact that our child welfare system does not seem to protect the children as well as it could. And you said after the Kema case was resolved, you would talk to me about how are we fixing the child welfare system so that kind of thing doesn't occur. Because you know, Mitch, Prosecutor Roth, as you well know, it's occurred again. There was a little girl who was starved to death in Hilo not long ago. There's been horrible abuse cases in Waimea. How is that stopping?
Well, because we have current cases that are very high profile, it's very difficult for me to talk about that. But what I can say,
but you don't have to talk about those cases. About how do we fix the child welfare system so we're checking on these children who don't go to school, who are maybe said to be homeschooled but aren't. Peter Kema Jr., sadly abused.
There's a couple of things that we're looking at. Last year, I brought a bill before the legislature that would require the courts to look into cases where kids are being taken out of school and being homeschooled. They would have to look into cases where a parent has been previously put under CPS supervision. In other words, there's been a case and that person's taking the kid out of a regular school and homeschooling them. That's a red flag. We thought that it should go before a court and they should view that.
Meaning if the parent had previously been involved in some
Correct.
Child abuse case.
Or sexual assault
Okay.
or domestic violence with
anything
kids.
Like that.
Anything like that.
Okay.
We thought, hey, these cases, you should take a second look. The homeschool community, I don't think they really understood what was going on. It is our plan to get back together, sit with them, talk to them. They have a lot of fears about CPS. They have a lot of fears about the Department of Education. They have a lot of fears about government. Some of those fears may be justified.
Most people who homeschool their children are wonderful parents who do that.
Right.
But we've all heard about cases, maybe not here, but the one in California where there were 13 kids who were in one family.
There's plenty of these cases.
Yeah.
And so looking back, I think one of my failures personally on that was I didn't do a good enough job talking to the homeschool community beforehand to explain really what we were doing. I have since talked to those people, and some of them I was able to change some of their minds. Some of them, I don't think I'll ever change their minds, but we were able to have a respectable conversation. And I understand some of their fears and their concerns, but I think it's something that needs to be done. We need to be making sure that we're not making the same mistakes over and over and over again. So we're going to be looking at that. We'll be setting up some meetings I think Senator Kahele is actually going to be setting up some meetings. We were talking to them, and I think that conversation needs to happen. The other thing that needs to happen is we need to understand as a state where our priorities are, and protection of children needs to be a priority. Part of that is they need to give the child welfare services the amount of bodies to adequately handle these cases. You know, one of the things when you look at some of these big cases, not just here, but in other places, is they're preventable. It's like car crashes. I don't say car accidents. I say car crashes because generally car crashes are preventable. These are preventable. There's lots of signs, and we're just not doing enough to prevent that. Now, there was a bill.
And I wanted to ask about that bill, because wasn't the bill to assign more people to at least one district?
I believe 5 more people to the Hilo side of the island. And yeah, I know we had this conversation before. Why not the rest of the island? And I think Kona has some big issues, and they need more people as well. But on the Hilo side, there's a lot more people, I think, that are under the poverty limit. And I'm not saying poverty puts you in CPS, but we realize that there's a lot of commonalities. Poverty is one of the things. Not everybody who's poor assaults their children, but a lot of people who are poor for various reasons. And I got to be, you know, try to be a little bit politically correct here. If you're a teenage girl, you don't have a father bring this person up, and you don't have a job, and you end up living in poverty, and you start settling for people who your parents probably wouldn't want you to settle for, we wouldn't want them to settle for, you know, you get an abusive partner who may not have the education or may have been brought up in that kind of situation. You have some issues. We also know that we have more people over there who come out of prison because the property's been cheap over there. Kids who come from homes where parents are incarcerated, they have a higher rate of all the negative factors as well. And that's kind of self-explanatory as well. So we need to start thinking bigger as a people, as a state, as a county. How do we prevent these things? And I think you're seeing some of those things that we're working on that are really showing some promise.
Well, so the 5 additional people coming to Hilo Child Protective Services, yeah. Do you know if they're in place yet? Are they still hiring?
I'm not sure. I believe that they have started the hiring process.
Good.
We don't work as closely with Child Protective Services as we do with the police. But, you know, we have had different situations where we talk to them. It's just not an everyday occurrence like we do with the police.
I may have to ask Child Protective Services this, but do you know what their measurements will be for whether this is a successful program, I guess, other than having fewer children abused?
Yeah, I'm not sure what their benchmarks are. But I know I've actually worked with some of those people in the last year, and I know that there's some people that really care, that really want to do a good job. And I mean, it's just like every other profession. You get good prosecutors, you get prosecutors that sometimes they're you know, whatever's going on. And unfortunately, when something goes wrong, you look at the ones that messed up versus the people who really did a lot of great work. I was at the Police Officer of the Year event, and I was just amazed and blown away about what some of these officers did. And of course, you know, I also get people calling and saying, you know, this officer did this or didn't do that, or, you know, and complains. And unfortunately for those people that are complaining, their vision has been marred, and they don't see the great things that some of these other officers are doing out there, you know, going beyond. And I heard a story about one of the officers who took care of this 83-year-old man in a situation in Kona, and found out after talking to this person, getting to know him, that he didn't have anybody at home. And so this officer goes and, you know, occasionally mows this man's lawn because this elderly gentleman doesn't have anybody there. So there's a lot of great people in every department. I have people like that in my office, and I know that Child Welfare Services has some of those people too.
Oh, yeah.
But unfortunately, when you see the negative, we paint everybody with the same brush. And that's kind of, you know, we just have to understand there's a lot of really good people who have a lot of good intent and are doing really great work throughout, you know, throughout the state.
Absolutely. And their caseloads have been ridiculously high. So this, at least starting with five more in Hilo, will be a good thing. Now, you mentioned police officers, and I think on this island, my personal observation is most of our police officers are just sterling individuals, but there have been some cases of police misconduct. For example, almost a year ago, there was a case of a police officer who is believed to have taken drugs out of the evidence locker, and this police officer was allowed to retire at the time. The case sort of came to light at the beginning of 2018, and this was a case that your office looked at. There's other cases that I'm familiar with. The question is, those potentially criminal cases go to the county prosecutor, but you and your team make a decision whether you will prosecute or whether you will refer up to the attorney general. So how do you decide in a case of a misbehaving police officer what steps you are going to take?
Conflicting out a case is not unusual.
And when you say conflicting out a case, meaning you all would have a conflict of interest.
We would have a conflict or what's perceived to be a conflict of interest. I can't go into too much detail on those cases.
Don't want to talk about those cases, want a generality.
A lot of people look at these cases and they say, well, you prosecuted these police officers. Why aren't you prosecuting these police officers? And it's not just police officers' cases that we conflict out of. We conflict out of cases where maybe we have a family member of someone who works in the office. We have someone who's a close friend of either side. We will generally conflict out of those because of the perception of impropriety. And so, unfortunately, those were high pub cases. But I would say in any one year, there's probably maybe 20 or 30 cases that are conflicted out of for various reasons. If there are cases that are going on that are handled and it's one of our current witnesses, that's a possibility. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons on why a case can be conflicted out of. I can't comment on those two that you're mentioning because they're still considered open cases.
Prosecutor Roth, you mentioned two cases, and I actually only mentioned one. I think the other one that you're thinking that I might have been thinking about is the case of a former officer who was accused of threatening somebody in the Puna District with a firearm.
Yeah, I can't comment right. on those cases.
But I think that's the other one you think I might have mentioned. So, anyway, but you're basically saying that having a conflict in a case is not that unusual. It would seem to me that the county prosecutor would know every single police officer. So would you ever keep any police officer misbehavior case?
We've actually are prosecuting. There's a whole bunch of things that it depends on. And we have kept some of our own. Sometimes what we'll do is we have prosecutors in Kona and prosecutors in Hilo. Sometimes we'll switch those guys out from Hilo to Kona. You have to also realize that at the same time we're conflicting cases out, Honolulu, Maui, and Kauai are conflicting cases out. Our deputies are flying out to those other islands to handle those cases. So it's not that uncommon. It just depends on a whole bunch of different things and the appearance of impropriety and how close people are and what's happening.
When you say conflict out, then you refer it to the state attorney general, or do you actually refer it to another county?
We will send the case to the state attorney general. They will assign it out to another county or the attorney general's office.
It feels like we don't ever hear what the resolution is in some of those cases, or it seems to take an awfully long time.
Well, you know, generally cases come to our office in various ways. Cases are arrested and charged, and those are the big cases you generally see. Cases getting arrested and charged. We're requiring the police to continue to do their discovery and get that discovery done very quickly. And Kona side, our judges have discovery deadlines, and if we can't meet those discovery deadlines, sometimes evidence gets kicked out of trial. We just had that happen. We were not able to get our discovery in before the discovery deadline, and you know sometimes there's sanctions for that. So we're very cautious about those things. If we're not going on an arrest and charge, in which case you're generally doing a preliminary hearing, cases can be brought in by info charge, which a judge just reviews them. Only certain cases can do that, or cases go to the grand jury, and the grand jury will hear those cases. If we're going that route, we're going to generally make sure we have everything done prior to reviewing it. And then our screening deputies, on the Hilo side, our screening deputies may have a caseload of about 150, 200 cases that they're looking through and making sure that they have everything there to bring before the grand jury or to do an info charge. So there's quite a few of those cases out there. It takes a while to do. Generally, we get a case in. I was talking to our screening supervisor about this. He was saying that, you know, maybe a third of the cases outright, they look good. There's a group of those cases that outright don't look good, and we'll say not enough to charge this case. We can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt because of X, Y, or Z. And then there's another group of those cases that we send back to the police to do further investigation on. And, you know, we give them 30, 60 days, and they're continued to work on those cases.
You know, you mentioned that any one attorney may have 200 cases, so you're looking at having like 7,000 or more cases.
Well, there's a bunch of active cases. You have to realize our district court deputies are probably the hardest working deputies in our office. And I say that, and you say, well, wait, that doesn't sound right. Those are generally the newbies. I can come in to my office on any weekend, just about any night, and I'll have deputies who are working to prepare their calendars, get their stuff done. A lot of times it's the district court deputies. You can go into a district court and see a deputy who's handling 100 different people in one morning. You know, I know our domestic violence deputy on the Gila side, I was talking to her this week. She had four boxes of cases that she was dealing with.
Wow.
In one day. She had a couple of trials to boot on one of those days. The amount of files and the amount of work that these people do, I'm blessed to work with these people. I don't consider them that they work for me. I get to work with them. Like I said, a lot of these deputies, they'll work 10, 15, 20 hours of overtime a week, and they don't get paid for overtime. It's just love time.
Prosecutor Roth, when we're talking about some of these issues, you mentioned the police, and I want to talk about bail. And I know in the past you've told me that bail is not intended to be punitive, and I get that. That's perfectly rational. But recently we saw a case of a frequent offender whose name is Justin Wyke, and he had to be extradited back to Hawaii, meaning he had gone away from the state. He was being brought back to take responsibility for crimes he committed here. Your office, the prosecutor's office, recommended a high bail. The judge in the case chose to lower the bail, and I think as most everybody on this island knows, Wyke went on to shoot and kill Officer Bronson Kaliloa, which was the first time an officer on duty has been shot and killed by anybody, and it was a horribly, and it still is, a horribly affecting situation for our island. So that is just one minor example of where your office recommended bail, the judge made a different decision. How do you deal with the bail issue? Because clearly you knew, meaning your office knew, that this person should probably be given a bail that would be high enough that they possibly either couldn't make it, or if somebody loaned them the money, it would be somebody who would pay attention to them. How do you address those bail issues?
Well, you know, first of all, in this case, he fled the jurisdiction.
Right.
So we felt that the bail that was given was too low, and we argued for higher bail.
Why did you not argue for no bail whatsoever? I'm just curious, even if you remember.
You know, I don't think we would have got no bail whatsoever. The charges that he had out there, I mean, he had a gun charge and some other stuff. His record wasn't as much. But we did ask to raise that bail because we felt that keeping him in would have prevented what purpose of bail is to flee. You know, one of the things is make sure they show up to court.
Yeah, he already ran away once.
The other part of that is make sure that the community is safe. We actually argued over several days. We came back, because the first time, and then we came back a second time. You know, if we raise bail, it's possible that we may have had an officer still alive. It's possible he would have bailed out too, because he did bail out. It's very frustrating. And right now, it's interesting that you're talking about this. There's a committee on bail that's been meeting. I've been a part of those meetings. The ACLU has been doing studies on bail. And a big push that they're making is to have moneyless bail, cashless bail. And basically, they're looking at ways on letting more people out. And I really don't think that that's the way. In this report that the ACLU gives, they talk about all these people who are in pre-trial, and they make a big deal that—
Meaning people who have not been accused yet?
People who have been accused, they haven't been convicted, but they're sitting in jail waiting for their trial, waiting on bail. Their argument, and I'll give you both sides of this argument, is they're innocent until proven guilty. And their argument is they wouldn't be in jail but for, you know, them being broke. My argument is, no, they wouldn't be in jail but for breaking the law or doing something wrong. That's one part of it. The other thing is, when you look at the United States in general, and you look at every state and the number of people who are pretrial detained, and you look at Hawaii, Hawaii has one of the lowest numbers of pretrial detained in the United States, and possibly even the lowest number. There's some states that have, I think it's like 300 people per 100,000. We're under 100. And so our numbers aren't showing that that's a big problem. There are some real big issues that I see. And, you know, one of the things I have to understand, and everybody has to understand, is that there are some people that if you put them in jail, they are going to recidivate or commit more crimes. That being said, there's some people that if you don't put them in jail, they're going to recidivate and commit more crimes. And so you really have to know what you're doing, and you have to have a good assessment tool to decide. My argument is that our assessment tool isn't the greatest. We do have an assessment tool, which a lot of other states don't have. I believe we can have a better assessment tool, and we should be working at that rather than just focusing on the dollar amount, because there's some people that really aren't going to commit more crimes, and keeping them in until they're convicted, I totally get that. But we have to do it smart and not just do it in one fell swoop. Unfortunately, I have a feeling the way this committee is going and the way our legislature works is that they're going to have a knee-jerk reaction. They're going to try to follow what the easy part of what the ACLU is recommending and not put the hard part, which is getting an appropriate assessment tool, which costs money. And they don't want to spend that money. And because they don't want to spend that money, we'll spend more money holding people in, or we'll let people out and they'll commit more crimes, which will spend more money in all the other costs to society that comes from that. So we have to think smarter, not just tougher, about how we do these things, but we have to do it right. And my fear is our legislature, and I think I've told you this before, that all of the problems in our state can go back to our legislature in Honolulu with that moat of water that surrounds the building. And you know the story here is that moat of water is charged with negative ions that suck the common sense out of your head as you go across the bridge. And sorry.
It's too late. You're on tape. And frankly, there are some decisions that have been made that would lend credence to that theory. Now, is there an assessment tool in use in another state that would be helpful for us?
I believe there's other assessment tools in other states. The Arnold Foundation came up with some really good assessment tools. We use something called the Ohio Risk Assessment Tool. And my argument there, too, is that we don't use it very well.
So it is a good tool, but we don't know how to use it properly?
I don't even think it's a good tool.
Oh,
I think
it's, well, then let's get a better tool.
I think we can get a better tool. But people are married to that tool.
Uh-huh.
And they spent a lot of time many years ago to get that tool. And I think there's better tools that we should have. You know, I'll give you an example. When they do the risk assessment, they don't give that to the prosecutors. They give it to the judge. So the judge is making a decision on what's going to happen with bail and what's going to happen in this case. We don't have that. But yet, if we're making a deal with the defense attorney, whether it's for jail or it's for probation or whatever it is, and we don't see what that recommendation is, we're making a wild guess.
You're blind.
Yes.
You are. Oh, that's not good at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have read, Prosecutor Roth, about tools that are used in other states that seem to have been effective.
Yep.
And also, some other states will put folks in jail even before charging, I think, from what I've read. You know,
well, we do that. But you get arrested. We have 48 hours to charge. They're
right
in jail for that 48 hours or that time before jail. I mean, we're making a decision on, can we prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt? And then there's a judge that says, is there probable cause to make the reasonable person believe that this person has committed a crime? And that's what they're detained upon.
And with that, we're going to take a pause in our conversation with Hawaii County Prosecutor Mitch Roth and pick it up again next week when Prosecutor Roth reveals some pretty shocking information about the man who killed our beloved officer Bronson Kalilua. We also talk about domestic violence and sexual assault, car theft, and more. That's next Sunday morning on Island Issues. And remember, you may hear past Island Issues at the podcast sites. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bracken. Until next Sunday, please Let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues, brought to you by Regency at Hualalai, a retirement and assisted living community. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us at info@labo105.com. Join us again next week for another Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.